You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Jennifer Howes. On this week's show...
Like I do with anything in life, if you're going to do something, give it everything you've got. Because you're no point in doing it half-hearted. Don't bother doing it.
But before all of that... Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode. Now, I'm without my sidekick, Jen, today, because she is off being busy editing NetMums, but you're stuck with me and today's guest, who's someone I feel like I know already. I've been watching him on TV since way back in the days of Children's Ward. He's perhaps best known for roles in Hollyoaks, Broadchurch, Corrie, and most recently he donned sequins and fake tan for Strictly Come Dancing. He made it to the semi-finals and he's still on the tour. And now he's starring in The World's Most Dangerous Roads, tackling perilous terrain and, quite frankly, a perilous driving partner. Welcome, Will Mellor.
Hello.
Got an intro.
I love the fact you made Children's Ward. That is going back. I was 14 then. That was a long time
I think
time
we're
ago.
The same age. So I was 14. I think I remember watching it as a teenager. I used to love Children's Ward. It was great.
Yeah, I thought I'd made it when I got in Children's Ward. I was like, went in school, I was like, I'm on Children's Ward. Who wants me number? You know what I mean? It was like that. And everyone was like, how sad are you?
Did it get you any dates?
It made people sort of not like me very much being on telly. I must admit, it wasn't the thrill I thought it would be. I was like, it was my dream. And then I went in school and no one wanted to talk to me.
Got it. So this afternoon, I watched an episode, your episode of World's Most Dangerous Roads with the lovely Keith Lemon and his not-so-lovely plaits. What's going on with the plaits?
I don't care about his fashion. Do you know what? His fashion, I used to comment on it and now it's just him. He wears whatever he wants to wear. He's head to foot Vivian Westwood. He wears them big hats. I wouldn't like to sit behind him at the cinema or the theatre, I'll tell you that. His fashion is himself and that's what I love about him. He's an individual and he's sort of... He's eccentric in his own way. We're very different people, but we're very, very good friends, and it really worked on this show. It was a great partner to have in the car. It made me laugh. When he was, the more terrified he was, the more I found it hilarious.
There's a couple of bits that I loved, but first of all, for those who don't know what the show is, give us a little bit of a preamble as to what you and Keith get up to and where you are and why the hell you're stuck in a car with this man doing what you're doing.
The programme is called World's Most Dangerous Roads. It's been out before. I think Hugh Bonneville did it and Sue Perkins did it. There's a few people that have done it. And then obviously we had lockdown. I was supposed to do it in South Africa with Ralph Little a few years ago. And it was literally just as COVID kicked in. We flew out to South Africa. We landed. We was on this nature reserve. I was like, this is going to be unbelievable. We're supposed to be driving up to Lesotho. And then we got this thing come through saying, there's this COVID thing is spreading. And we were all going, as if they're going to send us home because of some flu thing. Anyway, little did we know, we was actually on the plane longer than we was in South Africa. The next day we got, we said, you're going to have to go home because COVID is now the shutting down airports. I was like, it's never going to happen. And then we all know what happened for the next 2 years. So then when they got back in touch with me and they said, We're going to revisit it. And I was so glad because I was really looking forward to it. I love an adventure. I love getting out and seeing things. And I think that's what life's about, you know. That's where you create your greatest memories. When you go to a place, you don't know what to expect. You just see it and take it all in. And so I was looking forward to it. And then they came back and obviously Ralph's away filming in Death in Paradise in Guadeloupe. And they said, who do you want to do it with? And I said, it has to be Keith Lemon, Lee Francis. So I phoned him up and I said, listen, I've got this program. And we're going to go to Iceland. And it was like, oh, I love Iceland. Yeah, I'll do it. And then they got changed to Albania. Anyway, we're going to Albania now. It's dangerous there. So how do you know? He said, that's what everyone says. Anyway.
This is the man who didn't know who Mother Teresa was, might we add, in the show.
Listen, we're both like, was she from Albania? What did she do? He went, I think she was just dead nice. He was like, yeah, she was just dead nice. But so the programme is about me and him. We go to Albania and we go on the world's most dangerous roads in Albania. Let me just tell you what an unbelievably beautiful country it is. If you see it the way we see it, going over the tops of the mountains, the roads are unbelievably dangerous. We go up one road, which is called the Road of Crosses, because the amount of people that have actually died and gone off the edge, and that didn't fill you full of confidence. And Keith next to me was absolutely terrified. He's well out of his comfort zone doing this.
Oh, he said squeaky bum about 10 times in one episode.
He was terrified. But, that, you know, the thing about it is, I think the good thing to see him in this programme is you see a bit more of a different side. The mask slips a little bit and you sort of get to know him a little bit more. And it's good to see him out of his comfort zone. He's not a keen driver. He said he only usually do the school run. So he was like, I'm not driving, but I got him to do some driving. And basically the nature of the programme is we go across Albania on the world's most dangerous road, staying in different places, eating the food, meeting the people and being in a car together. And what could possibly go wrong with that? That's what it's about. But it's a great episode. It's got bits of everything in it. And like I said, I see a bit of a different side to him. And yeah, we get along great. He's a good friend of mine.
My favourite bit was when he drove hell for leather through the river and you were just like in the passenger seat shitting bricks because he just went for it.
I shit myself. I'll tell you why. Because he said, I'm not driving. I went, you are. I won't. I'm not driving on these roads. Anyway, he went, I'll take this. And there's a river raging past us. And I went, all right then. And I thought he was joking. And apparently he was joking, but I went with it. And you can see by my face going, well, you could have drove back there when it was just a straight road. Across a river that's raging. And as you see in the programme, we were... there's no acting required. I was proper terrified. But it was good. It's good. It's memories. It's life's about creating memories, and that's what we got from it.
So talk to me about Strictly, the fake tan, the sequins, the chiffon shirts. Did you love it?
Didn't do a fake tan, not once. They asked me and they said, by week six, you'll be doing fake tans. I'm not having fake tans. I'm not smelling like, I don't look like someone's rubbed brown sauce all over my skin. And also, what I didn't want to do is get out of my bed every night and look like it's been a murder scene, you know, like the outline of the person and is left in the bed. No, I don't want that. I'm quite happy, you know, and I thought a bit of makeup, it can make me look a bit more tanned in the face. You know, who cares? I don't want a spray tan. I don't want to be washing my sheets every day. No man wants that. So I didn't do the spray tan. Apart from that, I got right involved. It was one of them things, like I do with anything in life, if you're going to do something, give it everything you've got. Because you're no point in doing it half-hearted. Don't bother doing it. So I give it everything, and I did get sucked in. I was caught in the bubble. I really was, and I thought I'll have a bit of a laugh. Don't take myself too seriously. But after the first dance, how terrifying it was, you realise you've got to put the work in here. You don't put the work in, it'd be even more terrifying, and you can mess up in front of 10 million people live on telly. No one wants that. So it was an amazing experience, one of the hardest things I've ever done.
What were the hardest bits?
The training was tough but necessary. And it was the not getting it out of your mind. It was on your mind 24 hours a day. Even when you're asleep, you're dreaming about it. You get up, you're thinking about it. You're constantly aware of how you feel. So it's like, because I've got bad knees and I'm not young anymore. I'm 46. So it's literally like constantly making sure my body's all right, looking after yourself. But the mental side of it, constantly going, Saturday's coming and I don't know this dance yet, and you're going to be doing it live in front of 10 million people. It was that, doing a new thing. So you do it 6 days a week. So you'd be training Monday to Thursday. Friday, you in the studio, dress run and rehearsal. Saturday, rehearsal, dress run, audience come in, do the live show. And if you get through, you go like, yeah, I've done it. But then you think, well, it starts again on Monday and it's Sunday tomorrow. So it just doesn't stop. It's the pressure, and it's, you really are caught up in this world. And you don't sort of see anybody or speak to anybody else. I go home, go to training, do the show, rest and repeat. It was like that. It was, but at the same time, when you got it right and you did it well, the sense of reward and relief and achievement was massive. So it's like climbing a mountain. If you want to see the nice view, you got to put the work in and get up the hill. You know what I mean?
So what about the kids? Your kids are 18 and 14, is that right? So... teenagers, were they like, oh, Dad, you're so cringe? Or did they love it? Did you ask them before you went on the show?
Yeah, of course I did. I spoke to them all. I sat them down and I said, listen, because they've asked me every year to do it, and I've never said I'd do it. I was like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. And I sort of shied away from doing any kind of reality TV or anything like that for a long time. And I think it was because I was a bit too scared of what people would think. And also, I was told a lot that it would have a negative impact on my career as an actor and as a whatever else. And I just thought, well, I won't do it. And then I lost a few people in my life, and my dad especially, and I just, you know, my mindset changed, and I thought, I need to do more things. I need to do things that are out of my comfort zone. I've got to grab life. I've got to do things. And, you know, it gave me a bit of a shake up to go, what are you worried about everyone else and what they're thinking for? Just, you know, life's about making memories. And it was my mum's favourite show, and she had such a hard time of it. And I really wanted to put a smile on her face. And as I said, I spoke to her about it, and I said, I'm thinking of doing this. And I sat my kids down and I told them, and they went, well, yeah, go, yeah, do it. And I said, listen, if you're going to get mortified and people are going to take the mickey at school, I'm not going to do it. My daughter was like, I don't care, you know, go and do it. But my son said, yeah, do it, but you better win it. I was like, cheers, son. No pressure. But I had their support, and I think I surprised them a little bit, because, you know, I dance around the kitchen and they're mortified when we have house parties. But this is a bit different, you know, learning the skills and doing it. And I give it everything I got, and I surprise myself. You know, it's the key to life, isn't it? You don't know what you're good at, or you don't know what you can do unless you give it a go and give it a try. So I did, and they really supported me. I mean, they did take the mic. I'd come home and they'd be doing the dance in the living room and going, Dad, what was this move? And I was like, all right, like, leave it. Of course, they're my kids. I'm supposed to embarrass them. That's what dads do.
So now you're doing the live show of Strictly, which we came to see on Sunday at the O2. So are you loving it? It looks bloody knackering.
I'm loving it. Yeah, I mean, if you do the main show, which is literally terrifying, this, and at the same time, completely consuming. You don't get to see anybody really, other than your family, your dance partner, and then the studio, and that's it. So this, as soon as I said I'd do it, if they ask me to do the tour, I'm going to do it, because it's a way of getting out there and seeing the people, and you're doing the same dances every night. You do a couple of group dances if you've seen, and you do a couple of dances from the show, one in the first half, one in the second half. But like you just said, that's what's really important to me. You know, seeing these little kids and their families all coming out and enjoying it, and seeing the people you've seen on the TV live, that's what it's about. You know, whether you might inspire one little kid to go, I'm going to do that, or I'm going to do something, or, do you know, as a kid, I was inspired by seeing people, and it made me believe in my dreams and going, I want to do that. And even if it's just to put a smile on faces, you know what I mean? It's been a tough few years for people not getting out. So, of course, I grabbed it. You know, I was like, yeah, man. And to get the reaction from the people. And also, whatever else am I going to get a chance to perform in an arena? Until I bring my album out next year. Boom. I know, I'm
Boom.
Joking.
Yes. I'm joking. Packed crowd at the O2, you and Beyonce.
No, yeah. Oh, it was, yeah, it was, it's an amazing thing. I'm getting to go to different places. We don't get to see the cities that much, because literally hotel rooms, bus, and or coach, and then to the arena. But the response is incredible. And I said, sell out arenas all up and down the country. It's been great. And it's, again, making more memories. I can look back and say I did it. You know, that's what I'm doing from now on. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do and make some great memories, hopefully.
I've got a question for you from Grace in a second, but I was just going to say one of my favourite things was Anton, who is just the consummate professional. He has got the kind of like twee, acting it up, hamming it up. He's just spot on for the grannies in the audience. There was all these grannies behind me going, oh, Anton, loving it.
It's brilliant. I think the good thing about the tour is it's not just about the dancing and the dancers. You get to see the singers coming out singing amongst us, and the judges are a lot more involved. They can be a bit more freer. And as you said, Anton, they all play their part really well. It's got a bit of panto to it. So
yeah,
loads of banter, loads of fun. And there is a winner every night. You know, people get to vote for their winner on the night, which keeps it, like, the audience are involved. So, yeah, it's a really good show. It is knackering, but it's kept me fit. You know, I think it's the fittest I've been in years. I mean, Strictly, I've never lost weight that much. When I did Strictly, I lost over a stone in just over a month. And then I just kept it up through Christmas because I knew the tour was coming. And, yeah, it keeps me fit. It means I can have a beer in the evening guilt-free.
Precisely. Well, here is a question for you from Grace, age 7.
What was your favourite Strictly outfit?
Wow. What was my favourite Strictly outfit?
She was particularly taken by the pink trousers on the tour. They're quite something.
That's not one of them. I look like a pack of refreshers. Honestly, I've got that many colours on me. Do you know what it is? It depends because if you're going to go full Strictly, when I did Blackpool, they got me outfit out and I was doing the samba, and honestly, I was like a pack of refreshers. I was like camp as it was like proper Mardi Gras weekend. I was like, this is proper Strictly, and I love that. Go on, get me out there in all my campness. Give me more feathers. It was like that. But I think the answer to your question is, I really did enjoy the Halloween week because you got to dress up, and I loved the musical week because I've always loved Miss Saigon, and obviously having Nancy with a dance partner, I was like, we can represent these characters, we can do this, and I loved doing that. But I think when I wore the tails, when I did the song Three Times a Lady, I saw myself in them tails and I thought, my mum is going to love this. You know what I mean? See a son in the full tails doing a waltz to one of my dad's favourite songs. That was a moment I won't forget. And obviously the outfit, I don't really go around in tails. It's not my style. So only on Strictly. And it was a moment. So probably that.
So let's talk about the kids for a minute. Is parenting easier now they're teenagers or harder?
Easier, and you get more sleep. And it's weird because when they're young, all you keep thinking about is, oh, can you imagine when they're older, right? And we can, you know, they can get make their own breakfast, so you don't have to get up in the morning. And then, you know, they can we can go out for dinner. We don't have to get a babysitter. How amazing is that? And all that. Now it's happening. We're like, do you want to come and watch some telly with us? No, we're all right. It's like they don't want to know us anymore. And I'm begging them to come and watch some TV. We can watch a film if you want. No, we're all right. It's like my daughter trying to get her out of her room. It's like coaxing her out with sweets.
A little trail.
Leaving a little trail down to the living room. Remember, we still live here. You know what I mean? That's what happens. But they come back sort of when they're like 12, 13, they really don't want to be around you. And my daughter's 14 now. She has moments. My son's 18. I hardly see him. He's 19 in July. He's got a girlfriend. My wife sees him when he needs his hair doing because she braids his hair for him, or he'll come round for a couple of days, and his girlfriend will always be with him. It's unbelievable. It's like I've got another. I've not got someone else. I've got to feed in the house now. So it's it's on holiday with us. Honest to God, it's like we've got a family trip coming in March. I'm going to the Caribbean, to where my wife's mum and dad live in Grenada. We've not been there for years and years and years, and we tried to go 2 years ago, but COVID kicked in, so we have to cancel our flights and all that. So we can't wait, and it's only the four of us. And I think it's probably going to be one of the last ones. So I'm really looking forward to just, you know, wrapping myself up in them, because I love my family more than anything, and I still see them as my babies. And I find it hard, you know. I want to, you know, I'm always still trying to get them on the couch, giving them hugs and squeezes. And my daughter, you know, it's tough. I mean, it's tough just trying to, you know, get a hug and a kiss off my little girl when she's 14.
That makes me sad. Mine's 11 and I can feel it's the big one. I can feel it coming. The 7-year-old is still all hugs and like, just
when you run out of school and you run into your arms and they run out the school gates and run into, now it's just like, Dad, drop me off around the corner. God, so embarrassing.
And give me 20 quid while you're at it.
Yeah, like, Dad, pick me up. Don't pick me up outside school. Pick me up round the corner. I was like, I'm on Strictly. You should be proud of me. To be waving my arms, I'll turn up in my glitter. I'll turn up in my glitter. You're like, don't you dare be winding her up. I turned up once and he had the window down. I had some music on. I think it was something like Tupac or something. And she was walking towards me, fuming, going, turn it down, turn it down. And I thought I was being dead cool because I had Tupac on. And she said, don't you ever turn up with music on again.
Brilliant. You are the archetypal embarrassing dad.
But no, I know. Listen, it's hard. Having family is everything, and they grow up far too fast. And yeah, time flies. And I just try to cling on to every moment I've got. And I say that to him. I say, listen, I won't be here forever. Spend some time with your dad. That's what I always say.
Oh, bless them. You've kept them quite out of the limelight. Was that a conscious decision and quite a hard thing to do? Or has it been quite easy to keep them away from social media and off of your feeds and stuff?
I'm me. I don't have other personality. Some people, you know, they have a TV persona they put on, or they advertise all their life. That's not me. If I'm promoting a program, then no problem. And it's me going doing things, that's different. But I don't really want to put them front and center. And also the same thing is I when they were younger, when they didn't have a choice, there was no way I'm going to put them in front of a camera until they get old enough and I can say, listen, we've been asked to do this. Would you like to do it? We've done a couple of magazine shoots, OK Magazine stuff that we did at Christmas time. And I said, listen, they want to pay us to do this. You'll get some money. Do you want to do it or not? If they say no, we say no. And then they get an option. And my son's a model as well, so it's good for him to do.
I was about to say he's just started this modelling career. Are you nervous about him entering this kind of world of cutthroat modelling? It's quite a hardcore world to be going into.
Not really, because it's something that's they've asked him to do it, and I've kept his expectations the same as I would do for anyone getting into my industry. Listen, they ask you to do some bits, you make the choice you want to do it or you don't. It's a bit of a back burner one. He's interested in doing creative media. He's done that at college, behind the camera, editing, shooting stuff. That's where he wants to be. He's not like me. He's not all jazz hands, wants to be in front of the camera. He's very different. He's very placid. So he's a good-looking boy, though. So at the same time, you know, it's up to him. I just give him advice. It's because I'm in the industry as well. I can protect him a little bit. And they came to him, and I know who they are. Listen, it's what if he gets a couple of shoots out of it and he enjoys it. What's the harm that can do with it? There's no harm in it. And if he can make him a little bit of money on the while he's waiting for other work, then great.
He's only 18. Let him have some fun.
And we do stuff together. You know, when they come in for doing family shoots or we do some campaigns and stuff and they want me family, I always say, listen, this has come in. Do you want to do it? If they say yes, I give them some money and we do it. You know what I mean? It's, you know, as I say, I'm quite honest and open with my kids and my family and if they want to do, but I would never post stuff about them without them knowing or just to, you know, further something for me. That's not how I am. I'm quite old school and we live a very, very normal life. You know what I mean? We live out a bit in the country and just have a normal life. And, you know, I go and do my work and I come home and I'm just dad.
Is it hard when you're away? Because you spend, obviously, travelling Strictly tours, driving cars with Keith around Albania. How do you cope with the being away from them?
It's hard. It is hard. I feel guilty sometimes, but then, you know, it's my job. And the way I look at it is some people who do a class as a normal 9-to-5 or it's the same job day in, day out, they probably see their kids less than I do because they probably leave at 8 a.m, get home at 6 p.m. Whereas when I'm working, I'm working. But when I'm not, I can be at home for 3 months at a time, you know, and do the school runs and be I'm there constant all day, you know. So I'm lucky. I say this to my kids, we're very lucky to have the life we have and I have to work. But I would have to work in any situation. So we're very, very lucky. And because of the job I do, we get to go and have nice holidays together and we get to do nice things. And so, I miss them because I'm wrapped up in my family. I'm not very good on my own and I need to be around my family and I'm counting down the days to getting back to them, to be honest. But I'm trying to enjoy it while I'm doing it as well. My wife keeps saying, listen, enjoy it because it'll be over soon and you'll be moaning about being at home.
So what is next other than a trip to the Caribbean?
Well, I've got a series coming out actually and it's a really timely series called Cops Who Kill and it's on CI. It comes out on March the 6th. You'll see it advertised everywhere very soon. Each episode is about a police officer who's killed somebody and tried to get away with it. And we're starting with Wayne Cousins. And I'm the presenter, host, as you would say. But I'm more of going out, finding out why this happened and why wasn't he flagged up? How did he get through all, you know, all the red flags? And how wasn't he stopped before this happened? Was there any red flags? I go to where they were taken or where it happened. And I speak to psychologists, ex-murder detectives, talking about what he did and how he did it. And all we see unseen footage of when they interviewed him. This is only Wayne Cousins. There's 8 different cases. 3 of not in England. The rest are all in England. And it's unbelievable how in the police force, how many people have been murdered by the police. And how they tried to use their knowledge of being in the police to get away with it. Thankfully, they didn't. They were caught. But it's all about the vetting service, how these people slip through the net. And sometimes they're protected by their colleagues. I mean, it's interesting to know that Wayne Cousins, before he committed this crime, there was a WhatsApp group and he was known as the rapist. That's what they called him. No one thought it was important to mention it. And he'd been seen exposing himself to women before. Let him get away with it, even got a better job off the back of it.
That is a pretty harrowing series to have worked on, I would imagine.
But I tell you what, it's compelling and it's necessary, especially now with what's just happened recently in the press and with this police officer. So I'm really excited about it. It's a new thing for me. It's a bit like, you know, when Ross Kemp goes and does his things, it's more like, rather than me being a presenter, which I've done presenting before, it's more of me being the voice of the public. And the real reactions to these stories and these... what these people have done and these people who are sworn to protect us. And also now finding out, what are your rights? If a policeman is in plain clothes and he tells you to get in his car, do you have to get in the car? Because, wait, Sarah Everard didn't know.
Well, I don't know. Do you?
Well, this is the questions that you have to ask. That's what this series throws up. And it's very compelling viewing and it's necessary, I think. And it's, it comes out March the 6th on CI. You'll see it everywhere. It's on a stream on Amazon Prime as well. And it's, as I say, five cases in this country, two in America, one in Australia. And it's very, very interesting. You see unseen footage as well of what happened when Wayne Cousins was first questioned by the police and how he denied it. And then stories started to change.
That is a big segue from Strictly.
I'd shot this before Strictly. I shot this last year, so I didn't know I was even doing Strictly when I'd shot this. And I'd obviously already shot the Dangerous Roads as well. But I am always up for a challenge and always up for doing something different. I never want to be sat in one box going, I'm just an actor, because I'm not that. There's a lot more I want to do. And this hopefully will open doors to doing more hosting and presenting and being myself a bit more on television. Because, as I say, since Strictly and since everything that's happened in my life, I'm bringing out a book as well this year that I want to do, because I think it's about time that I've got something to say now. I've been asked to do it before, but I always thought I was a bit too young and I've not had enough life experience. But I've been through enough now that I'm willing to open up and speak about how it all came about, and where there's a will, basically. That's the book. So it'll be out this year.
Well, thank you, Will, for sparing us some time in your crazy Strictly schedule. And we wish you the best of luck for all of the work coming up, and keep in touch with us.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.